I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me, and I'd like to switch gears and talk about differentiation of human embryonic stem cells into a uniform neuroectoderm. And first, if that thing works. No, it doesn't look like it. I'm PC. That would explain it. And it should be switched on? Okay. Next slide. Work. Great. So, oops. That went one slide too far. And can I get it back?
This is back.
That doesn't work.
This is not the technology session.
Well, the thing is that the thing doesn't work. And that's why I'm not in technology session. It's good to know. Okay, so that give you a quick introduction without a slide. So the two good reasons we like to study human neural precursors derived from ES cells is that because particular stages of human development, the very early differentiation, difficult to study and inaccessible for obvious ethical reasons. The second is because there have been a premises for neurodegeneration and trauma in a brain. So there's two strategies, there's two reasons we'll go side by side. Now, that's terribly screwed. Can you go two slides back, please? Right. So there's the first paper published by Suchun Hong has been demonstrated that human embryonic stem cells indeed can differentiate into the structures called rosettes, and then eventually, upon isolation of those rosettes positive for Nestin and Musashi, you can obtain a culture that will differentiate into all three neural subtypes, neurons, oligodendrocytes, and astrocytes. So, however, you can realize there's a lot of cells in addition to those rosettes in the differentiation cultures. So that is why, next slide, please. Schematically, you can outline here the formation of embryoid bodies, and then in the middle of plenty of differentiating cells, you have these rosettes, which subsequently has to be isolated and amplified with the growth factors to obtain and expanded neural precursors. So this would associate with a number of potential problems, and I will not dwell on that too much, but just to say that recently there have been a number of papers, next slide please, that have been showing efficient derivation of neural precursors actually in the presence of high concentration of noggin, up to 700 nanogram per mil. That's been based on the fact that neural induction in the development, it's caused by the inhibition of BMP by cortin and noggin, as shown by Brevine, Lewin, and Melton some time ago. However, previous to that work, the experiments from several labs, including Slack and Gruns, demonstrated that dissociation of ectodermal cells results in a neuralization quite efficiently upon reaggregation. So in the same vein, work from Van der Kolb showed that mouse embryonic stem cells can undergo directly neural fates, and they call it a default mechanism. So what essentially happened in development is that if you dissociate the epidermis and then re-aggregate it back, it will neuralize very efficiently. So that's essentially what we've done in with human embryonic stem cells. The cell has been dissociated into small clusters, and then that results in a very efficient neuralization. So Roshi Bashpai was a key person in that work, derived these embryonic stem cells. And here I'll show you the characterization, basically how homogeneous, how uniform the cells in regard to the marker that we use to characterize them. So we're starting with human embryonic stem cells. So they're positive for OCT4 and NANOG, and negative more or less for the proneural factors. And then at the end of a 12-day procedure, 10 to 12 days, you obtain a population of cells that essentially express nothing except the proneural factors. And if they express it, they express it in a quite uniform level. All the cells here are positive for SOX2, Musashi, and Nestin. They're negative for differentiating, for terminally differentiated markers like TG1, MAP2. That's a very rare neurons, TG1 positive, crawl into the slide. I left it here to show you the staining actually works. When you begin, when you first derive the cells, they're negative for GFAP marker. However, upon passages, they acquire GFAP positivity, and after second or third passage, most of them would be positive for GFAP. So this is one example showing you that the fate of the cells, in terms of gene expression profile at least, changes when you amplify the cells, and that's one of the reasons why we like to work with the fresh cells. So given this system in hands, we examine the changes of gene expression over this differentiation time point. So this is a 10 days of differentiation, and then in the beginning you have a human embryonic stem cells, and then is a human neural precursor, and we'll ask a simple question, what are the overall gene changes? Look at a Volcano statistics plot, what are the genes that upregulated two times or downregulated two times? And that's what we come up with. So we've seen this very nice bifurcation at day three. And then if you put on the top of day three the time of derivation of the human embryonic stem cell, that'll be somewhat close to the guest relation point. And so we may be thinking what happens in vitro, in cultures. On the other hand, we identified several genes that upregulated at around day six, and particularly the MEF2C, the gene that had been shown in mouse to efficiently differentiate mouse embryonic stem cells into neural fates. So that's just an example of how you can begin to analyze the genetics of this transition using microarray data. Now, we wanted to prove that the way we culture the cells are actually noggin independent, because we never added a noggin in a culture. And so we performed experiments where we just use our original protocol, or we added a noggin, it's about 100 nanogram per mL, or we added a BMP to reverse the situation in the opposite direction. And what you're looking at is a microarray data average over a few days, and you can see there is a virtually no change between the noggin and an original protocol. Essentially, we were not able to find any statistical significance changes. However, when adding BMP, there's a massive changes, and here's a phosphor blot for the SMAD1-5, showing that indeed, upon addition of BMP, you have TGF-beta pathway activation, but in presence of noggin or original protocol, there's nothing happening right here. So we proved in that way that this is an noggin-independent differentiation. Now, these cells can differentiate into a number of fates. In particular, we were very excited to have a large amount of cells positive for O1, the marker of oligodendrocytes. We certainly have the cells positive for MAP2 and GFAP. Furthermore, we've seen a lot of myelin basic protein immunoreactivity, activity, and sometimes, actually quite often, we see the overlapping between the for example, neurospecific NLAs and NMBP, suggesting that it could be in vitro deposition of MBP under these neuronal processes. So we out characterize the cells electrophysiologically, and I will not go into too many details, but just tell you that they have voltage and ligand gated channels that could be induced with glutamate or GABA. And very interestingly, we detected a few miniature postsynaptic currents, suggesting that after 3 to 4 weeks in culture, they actually start making connections and becoming functional neurons. The cell has been implanted in newborn animals, and this is analysis about 10 weeks in vivo. The cell has been engineered to express GFP under the control of the PGK promoter. And this is a section representative of the chimeral lucida here through the olfactory bulb or the cortex and SVZ and choroid plexus. And we're very pleased to see that, for example, in a olfactory bulb, and this thing is dying, you see the very nice morphology of the cell that resemble the young granule neurons. However, in a cortex, you see the plenty of complex arborized morphology with the clearly visualized dendritic spines, which would correspond to this area of the brain. Now, in a subventricular zone or choroid plexus, we have seen the cells that has no processes at all. And we're now doing experiments to figure out whether these cells are proliferating, actually, and potentially retain their pluripotency. We moved on, and in collaboration with Lindsay Whitten and Steve Crocker, investigated the potential of the cells for preventing the demyelination. So this is a Cuprizone model that we use in the mouse. A Cuprizone is a copper chelator, and that produced at 4 weeks a very specific and a very clearly very clear damage in a corpus callosum. There's complete demyelination in the corpus callosum of the neighboring small tracts. and this is your original control. However, upon injection of human-derived NPCs, at 2 weeks of this procedure, we see now a partial rescue of demyelination, and this is an average over a couple of experiments and over a dozen of mice. So there are two explanations for that. The cells can protect against demyelination, or they can actually remyelinate the axons de novo. And this is still an open question. There have been a number of papers from Giandita Martina group suggesting that in the mouse system that mainly immunomodulatory mechanisms. However, what we demonstrated here is that we do see cells, and this is an example of the cells that's positive for O1. This is surface staining green. The cell's been engineered to express PGK, GFP, DSRED. So this is a donor-derived cells, and they have very similar morphology compared to endogenous O1-positive oligodendrocytes. So we still have to find out which mechanism is operational, but we show that these cells can differentiate in vivo into O1-positive cells, presumably oligodendrocytes. So what I showed here is that we will propose, in a way, a little change of paradigm. Instead of amplifying the, in a way, committed mammalian cells, which is a neural stem cells, we would like to work rather with the human embryonic stem cells that, upon good care, can be amplified, not indefinitely, but a good 100 passages or so. And then we design a protocol how these cells can be converted, ESL, into neural precursors within about 10 to days to 10 to 12 days. And that transition is very useful to actually begin to dissect the molecular pathways, as I showed you. And second, we think that the minimal amplification that we have in the system should preserve developmental potential of this transplanted of the cells. Now, at least but not the last, the most important thing that if you want to do something that will be relevant to clinics, then you'd better have this protocol very simple and cost-effective. And I think that the protocol that we designed would fulfill this criteria and look forward to potential application of this. I'd like to thank the people who done the work. Richard Bespire was absolutely critical for this project, and she presenting a poster. She's a CRM. She received the CRM fellowship. Stuart Lipton was very helpful. We collaborated with Maria and Marcus in electrophysiology and protein identification, and collaboration with Lindsay Wheaton was for the Cuprizon model. And I'd like to actually thank Baba Shima Jacqueline, and that reminds me to say that, tell you that we tested the cells, we looked carefully, and we never seen any neoplasia or tumors in transplanted newborns. And we also compare them in a subcutaneous transplantation with the human embryonic stem cells, and we're not able to see any tumors either. So we hope they're not tumorigenic. Thank you for your attention.
I get that. You get that. Okay. Questions from the audience? Yes, over here.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not showing the data, although I can. So we compared egg differentiation of the human ESL bin passage for 35 passages. We did this 12-day procedure. We passaged them for additional 50 passages. You can appreciate the numbers. We did the procedure again, 12 days. We compared the proteomic, and we did a proteomic analysis of the Cypher gene and compared the proteome profile of those two neural precursors. They're virtually identical. We don't know exactly the identity of each pix of this on this profile, but we compare them with the brain-derived neural precursors. We clearly see the difference, so they're much closer to each other. And, of course, any unrelated cell lines will be, again, much further. So, yes.
There.
When you see a group of basically a small number of genes that seem to be so tightly coupled in their the upregulation of their expression, have you mined the promoter regions for various consensus elements? And
absolutely. That is the work we're trying to ask the question now, whether the knowledge that we have in the field in terms of promoter regulation can explain that the data. And there's about 450 genes, so it's a relatively small group, but still some of the promoters are not fine. So we can look at upstream region and ask the general questions.
I have another question. Can you really characterize your progenitor cells from really, a cell on sort of a terminal differentiation path on its ion current signature? Right.
So the question here is that in this first step, we've seen that our initial population and our end population are quite uniform in regards to the markers that we're using. So we hope this is a valid comparison. Now, when they start differentiate, you would have to have a protocol where they're almost uniformly differentiate in one particular type of neurons to be accurate for your analysis. And that's what we're working on right now.
Okay. Final question while Ann and Rosa gets set up here.
Right,
please
there.
Use the microphone or the...
What percentage? I assume all of them.
Repeat the question, Alexei.
What was the question at one time? What is the percentage of ES cells that can be amplified?
Yeah. To form neural progenitors.
Let me answer this way. We did not see much of the cell death in the system. So when we come up with a certain number of cells, we differentiate them, we more or less recover a reasonable number of cells. So I don't know if there is a 10% or 20% cell death. We didn't careful look at that, but by and large, all the cells differentiate towards neural lineages.
Okay.